morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. It's Stephanie?
Yep.
I'm well, thank you. John had a client come in that needed, that's an hour late, and he's supposed to sign some documents, so he's going to just jump off and do that and get back to him.
Okay, looks like Dimitri's running behind. Should be here in a minute.
Okay.
And I think Natasha is going to come into the office to join us. I haven't seen her yet. I had some questions on the game board. For the leadership person, when I looked at the sample, sample scoreboard in the workbook, and we were tracking, like, the new account, it looked like the leadership person was totaling them, like, based on what each person was doing. But I just want to make sure I understand how that, like, they're totaling it, but if that person's still in that position, they should still be focusing on new accounts, right?
Yeah. I mean, the leadership person, I mean, they're kind of, in the end, in the scoreboard, the person that's responsible for everything. That's why I usually put the numerical accountability in their hands. Somebody else can obviously do it for them, but they're the ones that kind of reporting overall, how are we doing?
Right, but it's like, I guess my question is just that while I might be currently assigned to leadership, I still would be doing those other activities.
That's correct.
Okay.
Whatever else you have. Yeah, it's just the person that's in charge. That's the only other. So, you know, you may be in charge of planning, but that doesn't mean you do all the planning. It just means that you're responsible for how planning does for your team in terms of total quality of the experience for the client, the amount of plans that you get done, etc. So you're just the person driving the planning process. Okay, and the same with the leadership. You're going to be, say, doing everything that you normally do, but you're also accountable for the work of every other of the directors and what they're trying to do. So
you want to have, like, two separate scoreboards for that person, right? Like, them as an individual and then them as the leader aggregating the entire team towards an information.
Right. I think that'd be great. Yeah. Because they're your yes is the answer.
Dimitri's in my office. John had a client come in an hour late, so he's gonna take work and then I'm gonna hop back on.
Okay.
But we can go ahead.
All right, good. Well, welcome. Stephanie had some questions on the game board. What's on your mind and any questions from the work? And then we picked up last time we talked about the homework being identifying the niche mastermind group, a potential niche mastermind group. Anyway, so what's on your mind today?
Well, within this mastermind group, I was, like, trying to outline some good candidates for it, but it was more broad-based. So I was trying to find folks from a lot of different backgrounds that, you know, I guess it was more of like a micro B&I group of people that I thought were trying to grow their business, but in just different industries and industries that we typically would deal with. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, I guess, the makeup of the folks that I had written down, which I have an insurance guy, a contractor, commercial acquisitions, estate planning attorney, CPA, doctor, and like a business development guy for a personal injury attorney.
Okay, so the question in a mastermind group, a professional mastermind group, is typically, can you refer to each person there? And it sounded like pretty much you could. Every person could refer to you, and you could refer to them. That's the difference between just a networking group and a mastermind group of professionals. Because if it was a professor or a, you know, a president of a university or the CEO of a company, they typically may join a group like that, but it's difficult to refer to them. Unless, of course, in this case, it was a contractor, and that'd be somebody that if they were good, you probably could refer to them on a reasonably regular basis. Might be a little tougher, but I think that's interesting. Any of those that you feel like you could not refer to?
I mean, maybe the contractor. But everybody else, yes.
Right.
I guess I wanted to add to like a designer or creative, like marketing person, and then a realtor and a doctor. But
yeah.
I feel like you could refer, I could refer out to each of those folks, but there's just certain stuff that, you know, we're referring a lot to estate planning attorneys right now and to CPAs. I think in the rent folder when we're having conversations with clients about that first page in the mini-me folder, we've had a lot of success as of late. When we touch on that topic, we're beginning to find that not only do we have those professional advisors, that we must have had 5 to 10 referrals to an estate planning attorney.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was just trying to think of, you know, people in our network that we could add value to clients so if they need anything, they come to us and then we refer them out to specialists in those different areas. I just wasn't sure if
yeah,
track or if it needed to be more niche.
No, that's brilliant. That's really our enthusiastically endorsed list of professionals. So that you're kind of intersecting two different models here, which is great. The enthusiastically endorsed group is what you're talking about in the folder. And when people are filling that out and they can't fill it out because they don't have somebody, that's a great opportunity to refer to them. So, in the case of, I mean, everybody you mentioned to me is somebody that you could have in a network. They may not be in your intimate mastermind group, but they could all be in your network. The doctor could definitely be in your network. He just wouldn't probably be part of a mastermind group because, you know, you're just not going to refer to him all the time. And maybe you could. I mean, that might be interesting. I've never thought of a doctor in one of those groups. Dentists are typically referring to, I mean, they're brilliant at this, but they have a very narrow niche of who they refer to. So dentists will refer to orthopedic, to meth. What do they call them? The surgeons, dental surgeons, and that's a big business. So they're always courting dentists. So you're onto something there. Yeah, and some will be just centers of influence. They won't be part of a group. They're better separately, and either they don't want to make the time commitment, or you just don't see them being a good match for the group, but they can make a great center of influence for you individually. So this is where you kind of play with it a little bit to see which is going to work best for you. In terms of niches, for example, if you had a group of cardiologists that were highly qualified, and that would be kind of a nest of like-minded people that you could get a center of influence inside of the group of cardiologists banding together to help themselves, so they all work for a specific organization, then you're getting inside that group is a great opportunity. Now, that could also be a target niche in the sense that you might want to form a mastermind group around them to serve them. So who would be the people that serve cardiologists, and who would really know their practice and know how to service them very well? So they would all need a CPA, an attorney. They would buy malpractice insurance from an insurance agent. They may have a realtor, but that wouldn't be something that would change much. But there may be a realtor that specializes in marketing properties for people like heart surgeons. Okay, so you can form a nice group around them to serve them and make them the target, but you can also inside there have a center of influence inside it, being one of the surgeons that then refers you to the rest of the surgeons. So in that case, you can see how you would leverage the whole thing and turn it and use multiple marketing practices in order to deeply penetrate that market. And then what happens is you could become a specialist in heart surgical groups. There may be two in your market, but outside of your market, there's going to be one in every community. And if they're unique enough and you learn their language and you can really serve them, then you could get heart surgical groups all over the country. And that could be a valuable niche for you. So I'll just use that as an example, and you can see how you could leverage this in whatever market you're interested in going after. Assuming, of course, each one of these markets has to have qualified people inside them. That's the key. So if you're going to, teachers would not be a good market for us. So you have to be careful, what you're picking. Once you pick it, then people say, well, that's always, heavily marketed to them. Well, yes, but do they really specialize in helping those, that particular niche, or are they just going after doctors? So that's your advantage. Once you get drilled down, you drill down, you drill down. Maybe you get so specialized that you specialize in pediatric cardio surgeons. Now, then it's very natural. And that can be even more attractive if you specialize in them. I think we talked about this, but one of the things that I found was that focusing, but we shouldn't be afraid to focus, and we shouldn't be afraid to declare that we are committed to one particular market. We can always do other things. What I find is that sometimes the best teams, the most productive teams, the teams that are growing the fastest, have declared that their sole focus is a particular niche. And I think it, in their marketing materials, in everything they do and everything they talk about, they declare this. So it's okay to do that, if in fact that's actually what you're going to be doing. You don't have to, but it does help down the road. That wouldn't be something you do now, but as you develop one of these markets and you become really good at it, then you can declare that as your, as what you do. So, questions on that?
I think we're clear on that.
Okay. Anything jump out where you said, okay, good idea, that will work for me, or are we still kind of formulating that?
I think we're still working on forming our mastermind groups.
We have two meetings set up today, or this week with centers of influence, and two of them I have on my list for, you know, potentially in that mastermind group. But I want to have the list outlined first, and, you know, people lined up so that when we move forward together, it's, well, we have this guy, this is the idea that we have in mind, what do you think? You know, when we propose it today. And then...
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Because I just don't want to be kind of behind an eight ball and look like I'm not have a good handle on it before I approach them.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing that I've learned in doing this is sometimes you don't have to make it a permanent deal. You know, sometimes when we get so organized and it sounds so structured, it sometimes scares people off because they're like, this sounds like it's going to last forever. You can always say that we're going to do this for the next, you know, we're going to meet 12 times, and then for the next year, and then we'll kind of sundown that and determine whether or not it made sense to review the whole thing, and then either start it up again or choose to go in a different direction. That gives people kind of a sense of it's a finite period of time. You're not going to do this. You know, this isn't a 5-year commitment, even though you'd like it to be. You want people to have the ability to opt out gracefully. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes it a little bit easier for you to get people to agree to it if you have it for a limited period of time. Your intention, of course, is to do this for the next 20 years or 30 years. But for their purposes, it's because people... See, you know, their time is so precious. They want to make it. They don't want to necessarily commit to something without having experienced it. Okay, so this week is a big week in terms of content. We talk about the value question in the VITSA process. We talk about social marketing. And I just want to see from the video whether you have questions on because there's a ton of content there. Whether or not you had some questions on that.
So for the individual members of our team that we build out the folders with our monthly and annual planning meetings, is there content like or worksheets developed already to put into those folders like we have for clients, or is that something we custom create?
Go over that again. Ask me the question again.
In the video, it discusses building mini folders for each individual on our team around individual goal setting for them as members of the team.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So is that material already pre-constructed like it is for clients to put into the folder, or is that something we just create on our own?
No, I have not. I've never created that, to be honest with you. So no, but I think I would, you know, kind of use the format of the mini me or the regular folder and kind of go from there. You know, with an agenda, with a place for notes, with a plan, just like you would with a financial with the client plan. You'd have the business plan developed for the FA in terms of their focus on the team and the team's plan and their individual contribution. I'd take the, you know, the five-star model and their responsibilities, and I'd make, you know, their plan in terms of the team and how they would, how they, you know, what they wrote out. So, if John's in charge of planning, then John would have written a plan for the team for planning. And so when you meet with him, part of what you're going to review is his commitment to the team and how he's doing on their, on their, on that segment being planning. Okay. And then just an interview in terms of personal goals, professional goals, and how we'll be doing, you know, on that. And that can be customized for you, meaning you do it for a year, you could do it 5 years, whatever, you know, you want to do. But the idea is to not have an annual review anymore. That, in fact, if you meet monthly, need for an annual review is out the window, because you're reviewing all the time, and you're coaching and helping that person all the time. But it's a good question. It hasn't actually come up. It's a really good question. What else?
Monday meeting, that's the meeting that we do the game board, right?
Right. Marketing. Right. Yeah. It's either a Thursday afternoon or a Friday meeting on the scoreboard. Scoreboard is the place where all your directors report. How are we doing in each of the five stars? Now, building your plan, I mean, for the five-star model, is something called the gap analysis. Now, we covered this, but I just wanted to make sure, because I went through this with another guy who was looking to take on a partner. And I said, you make sure you do your gap analysis on yourself first, and then do your gap analysis as a team. And see what leverage that partner brings to the team, and what gaps you have left that you might fill with another team member. the gap analysis is more than just how are we doing and what, you know, and what's our business plan to become a, go from a, you know, a 7 to a 10. It also tells you where you might have some holes in the team that you need to fill in terms of skills. And that can be very helpful to know that. So it's not just how we, it's how we're doing in our ability as well as our execution. What else? Joan, you got your signature, right?
I did, yes. And actually, she brought in her son to meet me. I wasn't expecting that. David Pollitt. I guess it's a referral at the same time, so.
Good.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's just an hour late.
Yeah. Maybe it's a different time zone.
Yeah. She's one of my later clients, too, so I just had to help her.
Of course. Of course. You know, they're all human beings. Any questions, John, on this week's work, video, homework?
No, I'm on my planning, being in charge of planning, am I going to be overseeing all of our clients' financial plans, planning?
Not the technical execution of the, you know, you might spot check them to make sure everybody's doing the same thing for quality control, but the idea is really to measure the outcomes of the planning process and then the input, making sure that everybody is doing the planning and that you're getting the volume that you want and the quality. So, you know, being in Charlotte, how you manage that's up to you, but basically the answer is yes, I guess, and but you're in charge kind of the macro planning process rather than the micro.
Okay.
Every person kind of does their own thing, but you want to make sure that you don't have big outliers in terms of the client experience.
I guess we can track. I'll talk to Stephanie and Dimitri. I guess we can track that through 3D and just do, I guess, a spreadsheet on our plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's your intro.
The goals for, you know, the client, the numbers, like who's getting those numbers and how do you decide on, you know, what's a good amount versus what's not. And then if you're not meeting those, how do you hold each other accountable for if somebody falls short? Unless, how do you reward somebody for exceeding that?
That's where your creativity comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a team effort. So, you know, how do you work together as a team? You know, you got to make the phone calls and just say, hey, I noticed that, you know, you did a fabulous job on your planning this month. Congratulations. Or, you know, I know planning isn't a priority for you this month, but, you know, can I help? Is there anything I can do? Because we're falling behind in our planning. The very fact that you guys know what your planning process is and that you've got a plan and that you have goals is going to make you 10 times better than any other team. Okay? You may miss it by a couple, but you're not going to completely miss the ball. You know, you're in the game. It's the same with the marketing. You know, if you're, you may not hit all your goals in terms of numbers or centers of influence or numbers of mastermind groups or something else, but you know what the hell I'm talking about, okay? You're going to have a few, or they're going to start to work well. So you're going to do 10 times better than other teams that have literally no clue. So commitment to excellence is brilliant. Attention to detail is great. But you have to also know that you're not going to get there, you know, the first time, the first round. You just keep getting better and better. That's the idea. Incremental improvement every month, every year. It's when you stop using the game board or you stop using the scoreboard that you take a big drop in terms of your commitment to each other and to the team and the process. And, you know, it happens, but if you can get back on track, the key in goal setting is not, you know, always achieving the perfect goals. It's how fast you get back on track when you get off track. That's the key. Get back on the path and keep moving forward. Well, I'm going to have to jump because I'm on a tight schedule today. I'm in Tennessee, and I'm on a tight schedule, so I have to check out of the hotel and get on the road quick. But anyway, there's a lot to cover this week. Make sure that you go through the video and write down any questions that you have, and we'll pick it up next week. But I think you're doing great. You guys are really focused.
So we're not meeting next week. We're set to meet on the 16th. But
that's correct.
The 16th is when we'll be coming back from a week out in Seattle visiting with clients all week. So I'm not sure if the 16th is the best day to meet.
All right. So, Stephanie, just ask Roy to just push it back one more week then.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Thanks.
Alright, thanks everybody. Bye-bye.
Alright.